Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until He takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thank you so much for tuning into another episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number you see on the field or the court. Today, happy to have former Cougar baseball player and major leaguer Adam Law joining us here on Deep Blue. Adam, it's always good to see you.
It's always great to see you, Chef. You're a legend over at Miller Park, so happy to be here.
It's very kind. I'm pretty sure you're lying, but I'm going to allow it. I'm going to allow it. So, okay, here's what I'm used to seeing you. We're doing this interview. You're wearing a polo. You look all official. We'll get into what you're doing officially. I'm just so used to seeing you coming over to Miller Park, you know, taking batting practice, going in the field. How much do you miss that?
That's a really good question. I probably don't miss it as much as some might think. I miss the camaraderie that happens inside of a clubhouse, in the dugout. I miss the one-on-one interaction with the pitcher. But the day-in, day-out physical and mental toll that baseball takes, especially at the professional level, I don't miss that a whole lot, but I do miss my teammates and kind of the grind being together, but not the physical and mental side of it for doing it for so long.
So is that why coaching was a logical step for you? For those that don't know, you're now an assistant coach on the BYU baseball team. What's the saying, you can never go home? Well, you're proving that wrong because you have. So take me through how this came to be and why this was a step that you said, yeah, this is something that I want to do.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Trent Pratt, the current head coach, he called me 2-3 months ago and said that he had let go the current assistant coach, Brent Herring, who's a dear friend of mine. And at that time, I was working as a mental performance coach for the Dodgers. Have always kept in contact with my BYU baseball family here. So when Trent called me and told me that, I went into my mental performance role and thought that he wanted to talk about it, thought that he wanted me to listen to him and reflect what he was sharing.
You were getting
ready
to put him on the clock, weren't you?
Absolutely.
That's what I figured.
And before he got into any of that, he said, would you be interested in filling the vacancy? Which was the last thing that I would have thought that he said. It was the last thing that I would have ever thought that I would do. And I just said, no, I'm in a really good spot with the Dodgers. I enjoy my role. But, you know, we'll keep in contact. Type of a thing. And then probably a week or two later, I gave him a ring after speaking about it with my wife. We had just had our first baby and we'd been away from home in Utah. My wife's from Idaho for the past 10 years or so. And it just kind of started to feel right. It started to sound right. And then that's kind of how it came to be. We kept in contact and went through the formal interview process. And I showed up on campus about a week ago. So here I am.
Do you still think of yourself as a player? Have you made the transition to thinking of yourself as a coach now?
No, not even close. And that's going to be a learning curve. I think in the pro game, like, you don't call the coaches coach. And so in college, hey, Coach Law or Coach Pratt, like, it's just weird to me. And I would still probably feel more comfortable inside of the clubhouse than I do in the coach's office. But I'm sure that will come with time. But I think a unique thing that excellent coaches have is they're able to keep kind of the feelings and what it's like to be a player in order to relate to the current players.
When somebody says Coach Law, are you going to turn around and think your dad's there?
100%. Yeah. In fact, Tuckett Slade had said, hey, Coach Law called me the other day. And I thought he was talking about me. And now he's like, no, your dad, man. So, yeah.
All right, so let's get into that. Take us back to being a little kid. Your grandpa, Vern Law, everybody knows. If you're a BYU fan, you know Vern Law, baseball legend. Your dad was a Major League Baseball player. He was an all-star. What was it like for you to be the son and grandson of professional athletes? What was that like to grow up around?
I think it's a double-edged sword, and it's something that even pushed me to get into the mental health, mental performance space because it was a challenge and it was also really, really cool. I was able to have these amazing experiences as a youngster that I took for granted because I didn't know anything different. Hanging around Greg Maddux and Andre Dawson, like Hall of Fame caliber players, was just kind of normal life to me. And so I was able to, when my dad was the coach here, I was the bat boy and just kind of grew up around the game. And props to my dad for never forcing me or my siblings to play baseball. He was always there to support us, whether it was in music or acting or whatever we wanted to do, he was there. But then as I matured a little bit and started to think that this baseball thing might be something that I wanted to pursue, then kind of the umbrella or the shadow of Vance Law, the dad, Vernon Law, the grandfather, world champions, all Major League All-Stars, then it was hard to play in their shadow for a little bit. And even when I was first drafted and into the pro game, I always felt like I had to live up to their expectations. And that added some undue pressure that I put on myself that I wish that I didn't early on, but was able through work with psychologists and mental performance coaches to kind of overcome that and play for me because of me, not because of them.
How long did that take for you to get to that point?
It was probably in year three of my professional career where it was like, screw them, I'm going to play for me. And if I go 0-for-4, I'm not letting them down. It just happened, and you move on to the next game, to the next pitch. Whereas prior to that was, oh, I'm letting my family down, I'm letting the community down, when really that was just pressure that I put on myself.
You said that you never felt pressure that you had to do it, but obviously there was a moment where you probably realized, yeah, this is what I want to do. What was that moment for you? Do you remember that? I don't know if it's an exact moment, but that moment in time where you realized, I know nobody's pushing me to do this, but I think this is what I want to do.
I remember the exact moment. So I was a walk-on here at BYU my freshman year. I played like six at-bats. I didn't travel with the team. I went on a mission. I came back. I walked on again, and I played a little bit more. And then I played a summer season after my sophomore year. My dad just got fired from BYU. Coach Littlewood was hired. He called and said, hey, you're going to have to walk on again. And this was the first time that I'd ever played baseball every single day. Was in the summer, a summer ball team in Palm Springs. And there was a scout from the Braves that came up to me and asked, hey, are you have any interest in playing pro ball? I really think that you could be a really good player. That when he had that conversation with me, I thought, like, I committed myself, I'm going to do it. And I did.
Isn't it funny how even if you have the utmost confidence in yourself, the validation from others, it changes everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. And at that time in summer ball, I didn't really believe in myself. It was like, oh, my dad just got let go, I got to walk on again. But then this guy from the Atlanta Braves, Danny DePace was his name, that instilled confidence in myself, which was like, holy cow, I think I can do this. And then I ran with it.
All right, we're going to get to some of the stuff that you just brought up, but I want to go back to your mission. And you served your mission, you were called to Zimbabwe, is that right?
Yeah.
So take me through what your mission in Zimbabwe was like, because that's one of those places that I just don't know if anybody knows too much about. What was that experience like?
Yeah. So Zimbabwe is a country located in Southeast Africa, and probably what you see in National Geographic or on television, like that's what Zimbabwe is. And it's an impoverished third world country. And I was super fortunate to go there. I think everybody has their unique mission experiences. I think those who are called stateside, the missionary work is probably more challenging, but the living is fairly easy.
Yeah.
Where you go to a place like Zimbabwe and the missionary work was easy and the living was the challenge. So, you know, nights without electricity or running water or toilets, but we never had an empty 30-minute slot in our mission planner because the mission, like, people were thirsting for Christ, and that really made it meaningful to me. But I also, from like a baseball perspective, it was an awesome opportunity for me to mature physically. Mm-hmm. I was kind of a late bloomer. I didn't grow until I was a senior in high school, and so I was able to take 2 years off and start to become a man physically. So spiritually it helped, physically it helped, and then obviously the mental and emotional attributes that come from living on your own for 2 years really propelled me as a human being.
I'm still waiting for my growth spurt and to physically, you know, get better,
for sure.
To advance. Do they even play baseball over there? Do they know baseball, or is it mostly soccer?
Mostly soccer. There is some cricket influence from South Africa, but it's primarily soccer.
Yeah. So were you able to play baseball? Did you try and sort of bring the game? Was that maybe a way in to talk with people? Is the athletic side of your personality?
Not really. I mean, I brought two gloves and a half dozen balls to hopefully have a companion that could play catch with me or something like that. But mainly just throwing off of a wall or but yeah, the athletic side, I would just use cricket or soccer to kind of ease my way in and play with the kids and play with the adults.
For anyone that has served a mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, you certainly understand the impact that it makes, not just while you're serving, but afterwards and continually. How has that manifested itself to you since your mission?
Wow, that's a really good question. I remember Elder Bednar spoke to our baseball team in 2013, and he said a lot of returned missionaries, they come back thinking that they did so much great for the world and helping people learn about Jesus Christ, when in reality it was Jesus Christ that had an impact on the missionary. And seeing that experience and how Jesus Christ impacted my life from a gospel and spiritual standpoint, but also from a worldly standpoint, being in Zimbabwe for 2 years and learning what true happiness is like without material possessions has tremendously impacted my current life, my marriage, and how we view possessions or what we think makes us happy. And we've kind of pivoted from, I want the new car, I want a better house, to, hey, how can we free up time to spend time with our family? How can we have meals together? How can we spend time with those we love as opposed to material things?
You mentioned it a few minutes ago that when you started your BYU career, your dad was the head coach. There came a time where that change was made, and you mentioned Coach Mike Littlewood was then brought in as the new head coach for BYU baseball. You decided to stay and play at BYU. Was that an easy decision or was that a hard decision?
That was a hard decision, and primarily because I had other baseball coaches and Division I basketball coaches reach out to me and say, hey, I know that there's been a change made. If you're looking for a place to play, we got you. And at that time, you'd have to sit out a year, which, yeah, big deal. The school up north, both basketball and baseball, called and thought that maybe it would be a good fit.
You hung up on them, right?
I entertained the idea. It was a tough time in my life, but and I'm happy that I stayed. But really, it was the conversation with that Brave Scout that said, "Hey, I think you can do it." And I knew that if I took a year off, I'd be a year older come draft time, and not as lucrative to professional teams. So, and Coach Littlewood was always straightforward, very professional. He coached his own kids at Dixie,
yep.
And so he got it, and I felt comfortable with him. A completely different coaching style than my dad, but he was always supportive and put me in the best positions possible to succeed, and I'm eternally grateful for him.
What was your dad's advice at the time? Because it's human nature for something like that to sour somebody on a situation. But that didn't happen with you guys. So what was the advice that your dad gave you?
And props to my dad. I, now being a coach, I think you almost have to go into the coaching realm, understanding that all good coaches probably get fired at some point, and rarely do they ever ride off into the sunset having an awesome coaching career for one team. But he was always so professional, honest, with integrity, that he always took the high road. He never once said anything bad about BYU, about the situation. He was always there to support me of, hey, son, whatever you want to do, I'm going to support you. If you want to transfer to a different school to play baseball or basketball, I'll be there with you. Or if you want to stay, I'm going to be there with you. And he didn't miss many games. Even coming back to BYU, probably was awkward for him to see certain people or to sit in the stands, but he didn't miss a game. And I think his example spoke more than what he actually spoke with his mouth.
Staying at BYU certainly turned out to be a very good decision for you from an athletic standpoint. You played very well. We'll get to you being drafted, but was there a moment when you realized that you had a legitimate chance at a pro career? I know you've talked about the scouts saying it, but then to see that it's starting to come to fruition, what was that like for you?
Yeah, we had a couple young guns that were younger than I was. Jacob Brugman was entering his draft year as a junior. Jacob Hanneman was a return missionary freshman, age 21. And we had a scout day at Miller Park. And I knew that those two guys were on the radars of other teams. And usually after the scout day, the scouts want to handpick a few extra guys to stay on the field to take batting practice. Jacob Brugman, Jacob Hanneman, and Adam Law, we stay after to take batting practice with a wood bat. And that's when I was like, all right, like, okay, I know that the scout talked to me a few months earlier, but then staying for that extra batting practice session with a wood bat in front of, I don't know, 30 scouts or whatever, was like, okay, this could be a thing. And then you start to receive letters and phone calls and people gauging interest and asking those types of questions, really was like, okay, I think this is a legitimate possibility.
We'll take a quick break. We'll have more with Adam Law, including getting into being drafted by the Dodgers. This is Deep Blue on BYU Radio. Welcome back to Deep Blue. Jason Shepherd with you. Happy once again to be joined by Adam Law, new BYU baseball assistant coach. Do you have any specific assignments, by the way? Do you have a specific focus as an assistant coach with BYU, or is it sort of all-encompassing or yet to be determined at this point?
No. So my focus is on infield defense, mental skill development, skill acquisition, and practice design. In other words, how can we make our players better, faster than our competition, which is a lot of what I did with the Dodgers. And then I'll have a hand in recruiting, and then just some in-game strategies and kind of being Trent's right-hand man.
So in 2013, you are draft eligible. You get drafted in the 12th round by the LA Dodgers. What was your reaction when you heard your name and you knew that you had been drafted into Major League Baseball?
Yeah, wow. I was actually in the batting cages at BYU off season. I assumed that I was going to get drafted. I had a summer ball team set up, but didn't make it out there because I was confident that I was getting drafted. I actually had a deal with the Dodgers a few rounds earlier. They said, hey, we'll give you this much money if you tell all the other teams that you're not going to sign. And so sure enough, my agent got on the phones and told all the other teams, hey, Adam's not going to sign. And then I knew that they were going to pick me. There's still a possibility that maybe they were unethical and
changed their mind
left
last
me out
minute
to dry. But sure enough, they picked me in the 12th round. So again, at the batting cages, and I was just by myself. Like, I think my dad was working for the White Sox at the time, and I know that they had the draft up on the TV in the clubhouse. My mom was at home, and but for it to become a reality was pretty cool. Being a walk-on, like a three-time walk-on, and then to get picked and start my pro career was pretty cool.
I realize that that's the only reality you know, being the walk-on and working your way up. So you don't necessarily know the other side of it, but do you think having gone through that, you appreciated it more?
Absolutely. Absolutely, I appreciated it more. And I can't speak for, you know, first rounders,
right,
who had a full ride scholarship. I'm sure that they appreciate it just as much. But from my own two eyes and my experience and the late nights at the batting cages when my friends were out at the basketball games or hanging out with girls and I was in there pumping up the pitching machine to try to refine my swing, and to have that payoff was pretty sweet.
to have multiple generations of one family in Major League Baseball is pretty remarkable. What did that mean to you and your family?
It meant a lot to me, just because I know how much my grandfather loves baseball, and he loves the pro game, and he loves to follow it. He loves the statistics, and I know that he wants all of his grandchildren to do well. But for me to do well in baseball meant a lot to him, and that's kind of where I derive my satisfaction. And again, like, my dad never put pressure on me to feel like if I didn't sign and play professionally that he would be disappointed. So I never really got satisfaction, oh, I'm Vance's kid playing professional baseball, just because he never made that a goal. And I'm really actually appreciative of that, because I could have, if that was his motive and I wasn't drafted, I can only imagine what that would have done to my psyche. So yeah, it was mainly for my grandpa, and then for me, it was pretty cool. My dad was just, hey, I'll support you in whatever you want to do.
So what was your pro career like? Take us through the evolution of your career.
So in professional baseball, there's a major leagues, there's a minor leagues. And within the minor league system, back then were six levels. And you start right at the bottom and you just work your way up, typically one level per year. And like 8% of draftees debut in the major leagues. And so in 2013, right after the draft, started at rookie level and earned a promotion in the middle of that year. The next year I started in high A, which is the third level. I played all year in high A. The next year I started in high A again, earned a promotion about like 3 weeks into double A. And then I spent, this isn't a good thing, but I spent like three or four years straight in double A. I was traded from the Dodgers to the Mariners and went to their double A team with Marcus Littlewood, who was mm-hmm. Coach Littlewood's son, which was really cool, and then earned a promotion to triple A. And that's where I finished out my career, was in triple A with the Mariners.
Is there a moment during your playing career that stands out more than any other? Because I know anytime there's a promotion, that's going to be one of those things that you always remember. And certainly it shows that the organization is grateful for what you've done and they want to see what you can do at a higher level. Is there anything that stands out to you from your career?
I think people talk about the grind of the minor leagues, which is very, very true. I was in Little Rock, Arkansas in double A with the Mariners, and I got a phone call from my manager at about 1 a.m. saying, hey, we are promoting you or calling you up to AAA. The AAA team is in Las Vegas playing on the road. You have a flight at 6 a.m. and they have a 12 o'clock noon game. So I got on the flight 6 a.m. straight from the airport to the park. And as you can imagine, the butterflies, new team, new level, new competition. I'm in the lineup and 12 noon game. We're used to playing at 7 o'clock at night. And I swing at the first pitch and hit a home run to left center field, which is like, oh, this AAA thing's pretty easy. And so that was kind of a cool experience.
What was the reaction from people when, first of all, they knew you were from BYU, and then obviously knew that you were a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints? What was that side of things like in pro ball?
Really respectful teammates who... I don't know. I think probably the perception is people rag on the church or some of our beliefs are maybe some of the cultural things that we are sometimes associated with. But I think for the most part, my teammates were super respectful and super curious about what we live, what we believe. And I had a lot of awesome conversations with teammates in the clubhouse, bringing them to church, and kind of maybe debunking some of the myths that surround our institution at BYU, our church, and the gospel of Jesus Christ. So that was probably the most meaningful part of my pro career, was continuing my missionary work and just being a disciple of Jesus Christ, mostly through action and then occasionally through word when questions would arise.
Missionary work never ends, does it?
Never ends, not even in professional baseball clubhouses. It's always going down.
Just like everybody, there comes a time when you need to make a decision whether or not you're going to continue with something or you're going to move on to something else. what went into your decision to step away from playing baseball?
Yeah. I was released by the Mariners in 2019 in April. We had just started the season, and kind of shows the naivety of professional athletes is we think we're better than everybody, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. Well, I was called in by our AAA manager to the office. Immediately, I thought that I was getting called up to the major leagues, to the Mariners. And thoughts going through my head, I was just newly married about like 2 months. I can't wait to call my wife. I'm getting called up. I can't wait to call my dad. I can't wait to call my grandpa. And instead of the manager telling me, hey, we're calling you up, he said, the Mariners are releasing you of your contract. And that was kind of a kick to the gut, as you can imagine. And for a while, I harbored negative feelings. Oh, the Mariners released me. The Mariners released me. When I had a conversation with a cousin who said, if you keep on saying the Mariners released you, you're giving power to the Mariners over your situation. And that flipped my perspective of then I chose to retire after the Mariners released me. I had opportunities to play overseas in some different leagues, but I didn't want to go that route. So in actuality, I did make the decision to retire. And it's hard. It's still something that I work through today, and I think that I'll never get over it, which is totally fine. But having that perspective of me being in control of my situation instead of an outside entity has been really healthy.
Well, and ironically enough, your original team, the Dodgers, come back into the picture in a unique way. Give our listeners an idea of what you started to do with the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Very unique way. I probably minutes after the conversation with the Mariners and them releasing me of my contract, the Dodgers texted me.
Minutes.
So they send out emails, like teams send out emails.
Like transactions.
Transactions.
That this has happened, yeah.
Exactly. And a member of the front office texts me and says, hey, give me a call when you get a sec. So I call them thinking that they wanted to sign me to play. Yeah. And he says, hey, we don't have anything available for you to play, but we do think that we have a unique opportunity that you might enjoy. And in my mind is like, oh, they want me to become a coach. You know, I was a good clubhouse guy, always positive, and that's the perfect mold for a coach. So I kind of blew it off until 3 or 4 months later. Now I'm really starting to think, okay, what do I want to do with life? You know, I'm interested in the front office. I'm interested in the mental side of sport. Let me call back this guy and see what the Dodgers had. So I call them back and he says, yeah, we know that you served your church mission in Zimbabwe, in Africa. And props to the Dodgers scouting department. We know our players, everything about our players. And they said, we knew that you serve your mission in Africa. Well, we want to begin exploring the talent of Africa and start a baseball academy over there.
Wow.
And I, as you can imagine, not expecting that. And I said, okay, let me talk to my wife and get back to you. I talked to my wife and she said, yeah, let's do it. So I called back the Dodgers and got some more information. It's, without divulging too much, it's the academy, the complex is in East Africa. Obviously, they don't play baseball in Africa. And so we scout. We've built this program up. We're still iterating, or I guess they're still iterating because I'm no longer involved. But yeah, we're scouting the best athletes on the continent from ages 10 to 12, hand selecting them, and then bringing them to our academy and complex to teach them how to play baseball. And so it was me, my wife, 3 other guys from the States, and then we built out a scouting network. We built out a baseball staff, and we've since signed, the Dodgers have signed 2 kids to professional contracts who are currently working their way up through the minor leagues, which is kind of how I ended up here at BYU, because we had to build frameworks of how can we make these kids who have never played baseball before better than their American and Latin American counterparts who have been playing their entire lives. Right. How can we speed up their learning curves? And I think we may have cracked something. So I'm excited to plug and play these frameworks here at BYU.
So when you get that opportunity and you decide to go over there, how long have you been married at this point?
We had been married like 7 months.
Okay, so I thought it was even shorter than that, but still, we're talking not even a full year.
Yeah.
What was that experience like? Because being married is its own experience that you have to get used to, and then you're going over starting a completely different job that you're literally starting from the ground floor, and you're able to bring your wife. That those experiences probably brought you together, didn't they?
Totally. And props to my wife for A, being down to go do it, and then B, like, not complaining about it. She loved it. And I think, like, it was legitimately her and I over there for 2 years. We had no family. Like, I guess we came home for Christmases and stuff, but it was just us. And then there were three single dudes that were part of our American Dodgers staff that were over there. And there was a learning curve for her. Because of my mission, I understood African culture, some of the nuances that maybe are a little bit different than what we're used to here stateside, some of the living challenges that you experience in a third world country. But she overcame those in a couple months, and we made memories that are going to last our lifetime. And the way that we have our outlook on life is because of our time in Africa.
Well, and your outlook on life is probably focused on a little one right now, right? You are a first-time parent. What has that experience been like?
Yeah, Charles Simba Law made his debut July 1st. Simba in one of my mission languages means strong. No, we're not Lion King fanatics, but it's a common name in the Shona tribe, which means strong. And so we thought that was fitting for our first guy, Charles Simba. And I can't get enough of the little guy. And I'm sure those who are parents, you're life just changes in an instant. Your perspective changes. People told me all that prior to having the baby.
Yeah.
But when the baby finally came and he's laying on your chest for the first time is a pretty powerful and meaningful experience.
So you've talked about how, you know, you were helping with the Dodgers and in that capacity. You've talked a lot about, you know, the mental side of the game and of life. As a mental strength coach, you've created something you call the Mojo Lab. What is that?
Yeah, so the Mojo Lab is my consulting business where I work with elite athletes, college, professional, some high school, on their mental game and how they can become better problem solvers, how they can cope with stress under pressure, how they can make better decisions. That's what I was doing after Africa for 2 years. I went to graduate school, got my master's degree in performance psychology, transferred stateside to a stateside role with the Dodgers as a mental performance coach, was doing that while also had Mojo Lab on the side. So it's been awesome to work with. I've worked with a ballet dancer and then a concert violinist as well. Anybody in the performance domain all go through the same type of challenges, same type of thought processes, and how can we best clean those up and help them focus on what they need to focus on when they need to focus on it.
Is there a tie that you have noticed between mental strength and that side of things and living the gospel of Jesus Christ?
I haven't had that question asked to me before. I would say absolutely, and here's why. I think when it comes to living the gospel of Jesus Christ, it's really easy to get caught up in the commotion of day-to-day life that you end up forgetting what matters most. And kind of the parallel that I would draw is you're playing, I don't know, say our quarterback is opening up this weekend against Sam Houston. He's going to have 60,000 fans screaming at him, and it's easy to get caught up in all the commotion outside of him when in reality he needs to be focusing on what matters most, which is the play call and understanding where the defense is. And our ability to recognize that we're distracted and then refocus our attention on what matters most in the here and now would be the biggest parallel. And those skills, fortunate for us, are trainable, whether you are playing in front of 60,000 fans or whether you're a mom of two or three kids and feels like your world's crashing down. You can train those mental skills for you to feel and refocus your attention on the present moment, on the things that matter most.
Wow. Very impressive. It has been an absolute pleasure to catch up with you and to chat. Like I said, the last time that you and I have had a chance to talk was, you know, out at the Miller Park, and you know, you're getting in your swings, and so you kind of say hi in passing. It's been a lot of fun to catch up with you. I'm really happy for you that you're back here at BYU, and I cannot wait to watch you as Coach Law at the BYU baseball games. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes. I appreciate it.
Thank you. We're ecstatic to be back. Props to BYU Radio and BYU TV. I know myself and a lot of people follow BYU baseball and other sports, and it's because of you guys. You give us the best broadcast. It's been fun to have teammates who played against BYU, whose games were broadcast on BYU TV, and them express their gratitude to the institution for what they do. So I can't wait to get things going, travel less, be home with family, and go Cougs.
There we go. Adam, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you once again to my guest, Adam Law. My name is Jason Shepard. This episode was produced by Ben Hall and Josh Bergstrom, with senior producer and Dodger fan, Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.